everyone. Welcome back to the Razz Ball Basketball Podcast. This is joined once again by Brent and Craig. Guys, how you doing?
Good, Viz.
Yeah, not too bad, Viz. Good to be back.
I'm glad to be back as well. So we'll start with a bigger picture question. If you had to pick a guy, you know, if you could do it all over again, you had the first pick in your draft, who would you pick? Because there's I could legitimately see an argument for probably six guys right now, and I'm interested to hear both of your guys' takes. So we'll start with Craig. Who would you take first if you had the choice right now?
I think the tough thing here is how you're sort of going to go into the draft and attack it from a strategy standpoint. I think the way that we've seen big men go down this season, I think for me, Karl-Anthony Towns is going to be my guy. And the reason being is, I understand that the production is going to take a hit a few times because you've got the likes of Butler and Teague and Wiggins. You know, it is a star-studded lineup. But, you know, you're going to get 82 games or 81 games. You know, history suggests that he is a nine man. If I can get a full season or very close to a full season and build around that centre, that's good enough for me. Without question. I think that one of the keys this season to winning your league or being high in the ratings is the consistency of your big men and how healthy they are. So for me, I'm going to go Karl-Anthony Towns at one.
Brent, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been giving this one quite a bit of thought because I am in a league where I was able to get Giannis, the Greek freak, number five. And I'm actually in first place in that league. So it's, you know, it's hard to argue against taking him first since it does have me in first. But I think just from a consistency standpoint, with Harden going down, I don't know that I would have taken Harden number one anyway. I would have to lean towards either LeBron or Durant probably. And I would probably take LeBron number one at this point. I mean, he's just been so consistent, which is amazing considering a lot of people didn't even have him probably maybe even top eight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was even the first round at some place. A lot of them, he was in the 10 to 14 range, I think, in a lot of places. I mean, a lot of it from that, you know, the free throw percentage being a disaster last year, and now it's back up to, you know, 77%, which it's not helping you, but it's not really hurting you either.
Yeah, so I'd probably lean the king.
I really have no idea what I would do. I mean, you know, all those guys, I mean, Harden, Durant, and Curry, I think are all in play, really. If I had to pick a guy today for the rest of the season, I think I would go with Giannis only because of the fact that I feel certain that he's not going to get rested at all down the stretch. He's going to play every game. Milwaukee's in a battle right now for that last spot. I think LeBron is likely to miss a lot of games down the stretch, to be honest. I mean, they're not going to care whether they, you know, catch Boston or not. I think, you know, Golden State is going to rest Curry and Durant some, so they're out of the picture. You know, Towns right there too for me. The one, you know, Giannis doesn't give you threes, but threes are the easiest thing for you to find, so I'm not overly worried about that. You're not far off the blocks from Giannis to Towns. You know, you're getting a few, you know, some more points. They're rebounding. They're both double digits. It's extra assists. I mean, we're nitpicking here at the end of the day, but, I mean, going into the year, I had Giannis one just because of him hitting all the categories, really. And he has done that. It hasn't been quite as good as I thought it was going to be. I thought even 1.2 blocks he's at right now is a little lower than I thought. But going wrong, you can't go wrong with either of those guys. Because like you said, you know, Towns is going to give you every game. He's playing, you know, 36 minutes a game. Giannis is playing 37 minutes a game right now. And that's, at the end of the day, you don't want your first-round pick to be out at all. And I think they're the safest for that at this point.
I agree. I think one thing for me for Giannis that that does put me off to some degree is the free throw percentage. Obviously, it's not a red flag at all, but he is shooting at 78% this season. Going into the season, he was a career 74% free throw shooter. I was all on board the drafting, you know, Giannis 1 or 2 overall at the start of the season. But at the same time, I think that if you go that way, there is an element of him forcing your hand a little bit later in the draft of where you go, you know, trying to find that high volume, high success free throw shooter like someone like DeRozan or someone who helps you with 3 points. So, you know, I love Giannis, but at the same time, I think that if you take him, you've got to be willing to accept the fact that you're probably going to be a little bit less flexible than some of the other options around him. Does that make sense?
No, for sure. I mean, you're right. A guy like Lou Williams comes to mind to me, you know, a ton of threes and a ton of free throw volume that you are right. You kind of force yourself to get a guy who does that for you. Where Towns, I mean, he's really hitting all the categories. I mean, you need assists, but it's not like you don't need assists if you take Giannis. You just got a little bit more of a head start. I definitely see both sides of it. I mean, I think the crazy thing is both of those guys are going to be getting better, and you could easily argue, you know, they'll be 1 and 2 for drafts next year only because of that. I mean, Towns, it's just crazy how good he is offensively already, and he's not getting the volume that I think he should be, and I think eventually it's going to have to come, you know, where it's Towns and Butler's show, and Wiggins isn't shooting nearly as much as he has been to this point in the year.
You know, a thought I just had that's interesting is we've been talking about these guys going number one overall, and you got Durant and Curry, who are on the same team and could easily make an argument for either one of them going number one.
Right.
And now with the way Jimmy Butler's been playing, I mean, wow. I mean, you could make an argument for Butler top five, possibly number one, just the way he's been playing lately with the assists, with the free throw volume. I mean, the guy shoots what, like 11, 12 free throws a game and hits 92, 93% of them. And he'll chip in 1 to 2 threes. He's been incredible lately. So now you got Towns and Butler. That's why, you know, slightly off topic, I won't drag us out or anything, but, you know, the Timberwolves are going to be one of those scary teams in the playoffs where you have two potential fantasy number one picks on that team, where the only other team I could think of that maybe has two potential fantasy number one picks are the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Craig.
I think the format is going to make a difference here as well. I mean, I think we're generally talking from a head-to-head perspective. If we're talking from a roto perspective, it's going to change things quite dramatically. And I think for me, I'm more willing to go for the more rounded guy rather than guys that have got specific holes, because obviously the roto effects are very difficult to come back from if you're talking from a negative standpoint. So if it was roto for me, I can't really justify Giannis going number one. I can see the argument being much more beneficial for head-to-head, but for roto, it doesn't do it for me. Give me a guy, you know, I'd rather have Curry, I think, in roto than Giannis, because I at least know I don't have to worry about free throw percentage and three-pointers for the rest of the draft without there really being any negative impact there at all.
Yeah. That's why I would look at Durant over Curry potentially as number one because of the blocks. You don't lose a lot in threes. You're not losing percentages. You lose maybe a little in assists, but not the way he's playing. I mean, and you add in those blocks, and Durant, I mean, he'd be hard to pass up on.
Sure. I could go with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the last month, you brought up Butler on the player raters for the last month. He's fifth. You know, Curry's one. You know, he's only played 7 games. They'll see him with Harden, who's in third. Anthony Davis is actually second. But, you know, I would have included him in the discussion. If you look at, you know, for the full season where he comes in on player raters, he's actually second on a per-game basis behind Curry. But there's always that injury risk with him, and I could never bring myself to take him, you know, with the first, I don't know, at least couple picks in a draft. Yeah, you're definitely right from a roto perspective. you do want that balance. Yeah, Durant is appealing. I mean, even LeBron becomes appealing in that case, too. I mean, where are you getting, you know, the way this year has been, the only negatives you're really getting from him are turnovers. And you're going to just have got, you know, I'm a person who I don't mind actually punting turnovers completely if it comes to that, even in a roto. But, I mean, it's so good everywhere else right now. I mean, you're getting 1.8 threes with 1.7 steals and 1.1 blocks, shooting 56% from the field. I mean, this top half, you know, it's one of those things where if you had to pick outside of the top, I don't know, 7 or 8, and you got stuck at the back end, I think you're taking a real beating the way things have shaped up this year. I mean, sure, you know, guys like, you know, Oladipo and Butler and even DeMarcus, too, to an extent, you know, they've been good, very good, but you miss out on the super top tier, and I think you fall far behind the eight ball.
Do you not think that DeMarcus is in that top tier, though? You think what he's done this season. You're talking about 2.2 threes per game, 5.1 assists, you know, a steal and a half, a block and a half, and 25.5 points. I mean, you could argue that he's as rounded as anyone at the moment. You know, 5 assists, 12 rebounds, 2 threes.
It's a little bit, you know, like Giannis, too, where you have to build your team around it because of the free throw volume. I mean, he's shooting 75% on 8 attempts. So you have to work your way around it. And, I mean, if you're in a non-turnover league, I think he's probably a top 3 pick, in all honesty. You know, 5 turnovers a game is just so brutal. But, I mean, like I said, if you're someone, you know, I'm usually in this case, like I said, I'm fine with punting turnovers, then you're absolutely right. I mean, his numbers are absolutely bonkers in every other category.
Yeah, I think didn't Cousins have 7 or 8 steals last night?
I'll check quick.
I did the recap last night, and I think he had 7 or 8 steals.
It was a bonkers game. I think in the first half, Cousins had like 6 steals in the first half, and Davis and Porzingis had like 3 or 4 each. You know, the first half was messy. It was really messy.
Yeah, Davis got my lead yesterday, but I turned it more into a discussion about his unibrow than his actual stats. I kind of threw those in at the end, but I thought it was pretty funny. If you want to take a read and let me know what you think, but his numbers were insane. I think Davis had 47 and 18, and then in like 5 or 6 blocks, and Cousins had like 8 steals and 15 boards, and he only had like 11 shots total or something, because I think Davis shot the ball 30 times.
They were just unstoppable. Okay. said, super sloppy, but I mean, it made me a little nervous. I mean, yeah, Davis had an incredible game, and he played 50 minutes, and every time he plays this many minutes, it just gets me nervous. But I mean, those two, I mean, they have New Orleans in very good positioning to make the playoffs, and, you know, that's, I mean, God knows the GM and Dell Demps and Gentry need it, because otherwise, I think they're cleaning house in that organization. I think everything would have been playing this offseason, trading Davis, letting Cousins walk if he did, or giving him the max and trying to run it back. I mean, they've been running it back for so long, and, you know, they're a net neutral in net rating. They're almost dead even in points per game, but I got to give them some credit for, you know, they have next to no wings, but they're making it work. I mean, Etuan Moore is making a ton of threes, and Drew Holiday's been very good, and they've been healthy for the most part, thankfully, for their sake.
Yeah, but the problem is Davis, those guys went off last night, and it still took overtime to win.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the rest of the team around them is just a lot of they have next to no depth. It's not a lot of NBA quality. I mean, once you get past, like I said, Holiday, Etuan Moore, Rondo's playing, but I've never been a Rondo guy, and they're not getting anything from any of the other secondary pieces, really.
Well, I know we had another team for the breakdown this week, for our team breakdown. Maybe we should do the Pelicans next week.
Yeah, no, let's do that, actually. We'll know ahead of time. We can look at them a little bit closer over the next week. So, as Brent said, we're going to we're going to take a look at the Miami Heat today from a fantasy perspective. They've been playing very well. You know, they did lose earlier Monday to the Bulls, but before that on quite a hot streak, up to fourth in the conference. Still have a negative net rating, actually, but they've cemented themselves as probably in this 4-5 seed area with the Wizards, possibly the Pacers getting in there. Obviously, it starts, with Whiteside and Dragic, but we've seen a lot of other guys step up for the team as well lately. And, over the course of the full season, I'd probably say, given that Whiteside missed a bunch of time, that Josh Richardson's been their best fantasy player.
I totally agree, and it seems like Whiteside sort of stuck in this 20-25 minute restriction, and I don't see that really being lifted anytime soon, just because of their playoff position, like you mentioned, and they're in the East. They look like they're definitely going to be a higher seed, and I think they're going to want to keep Whiteside healthy, and so I could see him. He could definitely be a double double with two or three blocks a game in that minutes range, and it's a shame. I mean, you give that guy 30-35 minutes and you're talking fantasy stud. He's still a fantasy great in that range, but not everything he could be, and definitely would have been overdrafted, I think, at this point. But I do agree. Josh Richardson, that one hurts a lot, because Sun on the website, had been telling everyone, hang in there with Josh Richardson, hang in there with Josh Richardson. And in one league I did, but in another league, I just didn't have the roster space, and I dropped him early, and I wasn't able to get him back. And I'm still in first place, but I'm kicking myself for that one, for sure, because that guy, I mean, And he's one of those guys that it wasn't too hard to hang on to him, because he just brings it on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he wanted to set the record for blocks, I think, for a guard. I mean, it's just really nice to see a guy really focused on defense. I think that's why everyone loves Draymond Green so much, is his passion for defense, or Kawhi Leonard. And Josh Richardson, he's got to be in the conversation with those guys.
Yeah, I think for me, I wasn't quite as bullish on Josh Richardson going into the season. The primary reason was Dion Waiters. And I think if you looked at the recent trend with Josh Richardson and how he's been performing, it does sort of coincide quite well with when Waiters has missed time. I think now that Waiters is having the ankle surgery and is out for the season, I'm a great deal more bullish on Richardson, and think that, to some extent, he will continue what it is that he's doing. But it's certainly become a land of opportunity in Miami, and there's actually, I think, some sneaky depth to the side. You're talking about the Pelicans, where outside their starters there isn't really a huge amount there. I think with the Heat roster construction, I think there's quite an element of sneaky opportunity there. The rookie Bam Adebayo, no secret that he's a fan of mine. As well, three Kentucky guys last year that went into the draft. He's showing that he can play in this league. It surprised even me, actually, how quickly the game slowed down for him, because that was always my criticism of him at Kentucky, was that the game looked a little bit too fast. You could see the body, you could see the talent. So he's amazed me a lot this season. I'm a little bit concerned with the Dragic situation in terms of his shoulder. I know he's been playing much better of late, but down the stretch, I think it's definitely something you need to monitor, how hurt he actually really is. He says he's in pain when he's playing, but he is playing. And I just can't trust Whiteside in fantasy. I don't know when he's going to be healthy, when he isn't. And it wouldn't surprise me, I don't think this season, but next season, if the Heat move away from him, especially with the development of with Bam. They brought in Kelly Olynyk this season. I think that was a sneaky move. And, Derek Jones Jr., James Johnson, there's plenty to watch on this team. Well, Wayne Ellington as well. So definitely a lot to keep an eye on from a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I mean, I Richardson's only owned in about 50% of leagues, and I think he should be owned in even a 10-man league for sure at this point. If you look at his assist totals for the last, eight or so games, he's gotten four assists in six of the last eight, four or more. We talked about Waiters being out, and Monday, Tyler Johnson hurt his ankle. We don't know the severity now, but it's safe to assume he's going to miss at least, you know, a week or two. We talked about Dragic, and I think you're right. They're going to want to keep him healthy. He's averaging about 32 minutes right now, but he did end up playing 38 on Monday in the loss. I don't think that's going to last, but assume he gets back to that 32-minute range. What do you see, I'll ask you, Brent, from their second unit of being the primary ball handler, is Richardson going to get that uptick in assists? Is that going to last? Is it going to be James Johnson? Is it going to be a completely free-flowing thing? I mean, the one thing that surprised me with Bam is he's had, in his last 10, he's had a bunch of 4 or 5 assist games. Now he has, zeros and ones mixed in there too. But he surprised me with how well he's moving the ball too. And people need assists. It's the hardest category to get for the most part. So I was wondering if, or Justice Winslow, I didn't even mention, who could, handle the ball a lot last year before a year to shoulder. Do you have any guesses or, what do you think the Heat are going to do when Dragic is off the floor?
Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much summed it up. I mean, Justice Winslow is one of those guys where he has all the tools to just be this kind of Draymond Green almost type of fantasy guy, but he's just not able to put it together, and I just cannot trust him this year. A big man who boards and assists like him is always so tempting, but I would avoid him. James Johnson, he's a guy who, surprisingly, I saw him end up on the waiver wire in a couple of my leagues that are like 14-team leagues, and I immediately put in a claim for him and didn't get him. But I could see his assist numbers. I mean, they're always pretty strong. But yeah, I think when Dragic isn't on the floor, I think it's going to be, like you said, kind of a committee approach. I think Josh Richardson is going to handle the ball quite a bit. I think James Johnson can bring the ball up. I think we will see Winslow get some opportunities. Ellington, he seems more like a three-point specialist, although
he's helped in points a little bit too. I assume that was what you were going to say. But it's weird. Yeah, he is the poster boy of Ragnoff. JV and Slim used to call guys like that before, who are literally good in threes and nothing else. I mean, you look at Ellington's stats on the season, he grades out positively in almost nothing else. I mean, the free throws are not the worst, but there's no volume there at all. I mean, he's making 3 threes a game. There is some value for that, at least in deeper leagues. Or if you are in a head-to-head and you need streamers on the weekend to catch up there. And with Johnson going down, it's the lack of guys who can even play the two. I would not be surprised at all if Richardson and Ellington are playing, 36 minutes a game.
I mean, Ellington, I looked at just the last 10 games, and I think only one time in the last 10 games he's played under 30 minutes. And that's before Tyler Johnson got hurt. And I think there was only one or two games in the last 10 where he made less than 3 threes. So, I mean, there are certain three-point specialists that are worth owning, and Wayne Ellington's that perfect example because he's going to get over 30 minutes a game. It's hard to guarantee 3 three-pointers or more, but he's almost guaranteed to get you 3 three-pointers or more. And, if you get 4 rebounds out of him and a steal, you're pretty happy. And in some teams, that's really needed. I know I'm in first place in a league, and I think I mentioned that like 4 times. But, you're dealing with an expert here. Where Ellington is filling the last spot in my lineup because threes is one of the categories I'm kind of middle of the road in. And you guarantee me 3 or 4 threes a game, I'll take it.
I'm interested in, you're talking about them playing not Whiteside. They ended some games even with Bam next to Whiteside, which I think is super interesting. Here we are. Olynyk is like a great guy for deep leagues because he's decent enough in every category, but not particularly good in any of them. Just so many guys on this team that are relevant. And that's even, if Waiters wasn't out, we'd be looking at 9 or 10 guys who have at least some value. And the Whiteside discussion is interesting. I think they do like Bam a lot. They're obviously giving him more minutes than they did. Maybe you're right, Kurt. Maybe they do try to move away from him in the offseason and they try to, run with Bam at center. And when they don't, play Olynyk at center and try to outscore teams. They have a few different options.
I think what's impressed me, I think, with Miami, I mean, part of, you know, we're talking about, in terms of, from a player standpoint, a very sort of unsexy team, if you like. Obviously, Whiteside and Dragic are going to get all the sort of plaudits as such in terms of guys that people want to own. But they have a lot of flexibility on this guy, on this roster. And it reminds me a little bit, not so much in the way that they play, but in the way they have constructed their roster as someone like Toronto, for example. You know, a lot of guys, you know, a lot of bigs that can put the basketball on the floor. They've got, you know, bigs who can just defend the rim. You know, you've got a lot of swing men that can put the ball on the floor. And you've also got, you know, guys that play off the ball really well, like sort of a Wayne Ellington and stuff. So, you know, I think a lot of their success has been from, you know, increased efficiency from beyond the arc, and just this sort of fluid roster flexibility that they have with, you know, being able to put a team on the floor to be able to defend, you know, most opposition lineups.
Yeah, I trust Spoelstra to know which guys to have out there at the right times too, as far as coaching goes. He's probably, I mean, he has to be my top 10. He's probably my top 5 in coaches in the league. I just think he's terrific.
Well, Spoelstra's one of those guys where, you know, he got, you know, he landed, you know, he was Steve Kerr before, you know, there was Steve Kerr. I mean, he got the lottery ticket, you know, getting LeBron and Bosch and Wade and just happened to be there when all that was going down. And I was one of those guys who was like, okay, is this is he a good coach, or is he just a beneficiary of a lucky situation? And this, the last couple of years, I'm totally sold on Spoelstra being a legitimate top coach in this league. Yeah, top 10, top 8, top 5 coach in this league. Mm-hmm. And I know we were talking about we were going to be moving into talking about the trade deadline a little bit too, and how that might affect fantasy. I was going to pose this to Craig and Viz. You guys, do you think that Miami could be buyers at the trade deadline? Are they, you know, do they have pieces like Winslow or, you know, something like that where they might be able to trade an expiring contract, or, you know, maybe pick up that extra ball handler or an extra kind of, you know, guy to replace the waiters?
I mean, I think Winslow's really the only guy they have that they could move, only because, like, they're basically locked into this roster. I mean, they just gave Olynyk a 4-year deal. Tyler Johnson's still got a few years left. James Johnson has got a 4-year deal. Most of the team is locked in. I could see them being a, you know, appealing destination maybe for a buyout. But if they do want to go the trade route, it's going to be, you know, someone who could play 15 minutes, probably they can get for a second-round pick. I mean, they don't have a first-round pick. Phoenix has it from Dragic trade, I believe, this year. If not, it's the year after, too. But I know they owed 2 first-round picks. And like I said, maybe some team, you know, wants to take a flyer on Winslow. I mean, I still think, oh, he would have some value around the league. And it's hard to say what they're trying to go for, and if they're willing to give up on Winslow at this point.
Yeah, I can't see the Heat giving up on Winslow at all. I mean, regardless of what we think in the fantasy community, you know, he's still a guy that is thought very highly of in Miami within their coaching staff. And, you know, it was a big injury that he had, and I think they're just in no real rush to bring him back. I think he does add value to the team on the court, and I think he is appreciated by Spoelstra. I think, like you said, I think they are locked into this roster somewhat. If they do make a move, I don't see any kind of blockbuster move. I think it will be some small key thing where they bring in another ball handler for the second unit, possibly. Nothing that's really going to grab our attention in fantasy, that's for sure. But I can't see anything significant. I certainly can't see them giving up on Winslow. I just don't see who there that they can trade. Possibly White, possibly Hammonds. You know, they might have some appeal in the market. They've got Jordan Mickey there too as well. You know, an intriguing guy. who I think could, you know, down the run, again, not in fantasy, but in real basketball, play some significance. But I just don't see what the Heat will really do in terms of bringing a superstar in. I just think it's somebody going to be somebody low-key, another ball handler.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the balance of power in the NBA, a team like the Heat, you know, really don't have much of a chance. You know, we've been talking this whole time. They really don't have a superstar. I mean, Goran Dragic is the closest thing they have to a superstar. Whiteside looked like he was going there, but I don't know that he's going to get there. And, you know, it's just, I think the top teams are just too strong. But it is really nice to see a team sort of built the way Miami is, kind of through the draft, just kind of subtly, little subtle moves here and there, and still being able to really shake things up in the age of the super team.
I mean, if they play the Wizards in the first round, which they would right now if the season ended, would you pick them or would you pick the Wizards? I feel like their ceiling is to win the first round. I don't think they can go. I mean, they can't go past that. They're clearly worse than Boston, Toronto, and Cleveland. I would probably pick the Wizards too, but I wouldn't feel great about it almost solely just Bolster versus Scott Brooks. And the bench does matter less in the playoffs, but the Wizards bench is such a dumpster fire. I mean, that's a team that we could talk about another time that I think they're another target to make another trade for someone off their bench like they did for Bogdanovich last year. But it seems like the most interesting playoff series, the way things are lined up right now, at least in the East. I mean, the top three teams, to me, are just a tier above everyone else. I just couldn't even fathom an upset. I mean, I guess Toronto would play Milwaukee right now. Maybe Giannis is just so good that he could do it. But I like this Raptors team more than I have in years past.
Yeah, the NBA is not like March Madness, though, where you could just have a Kemba Walker or a Steph Curry and they could carry you all the way through to the Final Four or the final, you know. But, you know, with the Wizards, just that you mentioned them, that team plays to a level of their opponent that I wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Warriors, and I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to the Hawks. You know, that's one of those teams that they seem to just play to the level of the opponent, which means they're always going to be in a tough series.
Yeah, I mean, it's been that way since the beginning. I mean, they had the one year where they took care of the Raptors easy, but otherwise every series was a dogfight. I mean, I watched them play today a little bit against Milwaukee, and Wall had a great first half. Then he couldn't hit a shot for his life in the second half, and it's just a lot of, I don't know, it's just that team is just so frustrating because I feel like their ceiling is, you know, at least making the conference finals type of team. And they just, I just don't think they're going to reach it at this point. It's just, I don't know. They're just super frustrating to me. Like, there's, you know, being a hockey guy, there's a lot of teams, or specifically players who are like that, where you can see the potential on a regular basis and in this team, but they never can manage to find it. And I somewhat feel that way about this Wizards team.
Hey, can I start a petition to get Lou Williams on the All-Star team?
What he's doing right now to get the Clippers back in it is pretty remarkable. I mean, it's really, it's not too much different than what he did last year between the Lakers and the Rockets, but as we're recording this right now, he's got another 16 at halftime with 6 assists against the Rockets and looks well on his way to another 30-point game. It's kind of remarkable. A guy, I mean, you look at over the last month, he's top 10 in player raters, and he's not helping you in rebounds. He's not really helping you in steals. He's definitely not helping you in blocks, and it's still good enough because he's just the free throw volume, the points, the threes. Great value for anyone who picked him up or drafted him late this year.
He's everything Jamal Crawford thinks he is.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Let's move on to the Lakers now. Lonzo has been playing much better over the last month or so compared to where he was before. I mean, he's still only shooting 42%, but considering he was in the mid-30s, it is drastic improvement. Kuzma, you know, he found a little bit of a rough patch, and now Lonzo is out. I'm trying to think about the best way to go about this. I mean, are we at the point where Lonzo is just underrated because we're ignoring the positive impact that he has on the rest of his team?
I think for me, in every league I'm in, I've pretty much been targeting Lonzo Ball for trade, except for obviously the leagues for our own. And I think we have this perception at times where we expect these rookies to come into the league and be instant superstars, and it doesn't happen, and it creates this massive, buying opportunity for us to be able to get these guys at what I consider a discount value. And a couple of weeks ago, I thought that was the opportunity for Lonzo. This guy is going to be a superstar in my mind. You've just got to be realistic in what it is that you expect from him. We're not going to get that 30-point a game average that you get from a lot of the other guys. But at the same time, we're talking about a guy who did shoot 50% at college, or higher than 50. I think it's 55%. The free throw volume is so low that it doesn't affect you that dramatically. So you talk about 2.5 free throws per game, it doesn't really hurt you. And the ability to do it all everywhere else, I think, is massively underrated at this point. Certainly in a dynasty league, you want to really be aggressive, I think. Even in redraft, though, I think now is the opportunity to go out there and get him, because health aside, I think he has every opportunity to be a top 30, top 40 player for the rest of the season. And I bet most guys in your league don't view him that way.
Yeah, to me, like, to Lonzo kind of reminds me of, in those 80s teen movies where, Michael J. Fox or someone like that always had this really good friend who was a girl, and she was like kind of cute, but they got along really well. And then, but he always wanted like the really, good looking blonde cheerleader girl who was kind of a bee. And she never gave him the time of day until, he got some special ability, and then all of a sudden she wanted him. But then he noticed that all along, the friend girl was right there and looked really good and was perfect for him the whole time. And right now I think that, Kuzma and Donovan Mitchell and these other guys are like that sexy blonde. And Lonzo is just, he's the girl who's right there next to you the whole time, who makes you laugh, who you enjoy hanging out with. And you're like, man, I should have just chosen him all along. And I think that's Lonzo. Like, we saw the impact that he has on his team as, what is he, 19-year-old rookie? I mean, he goes out and Kyle Kuzma, who people were starting to say ridiculous things like, the Lakers should have taken Kuzma over Lonzo Ball. Like, I mean, really? As soon as Lonzo goes out, Kuzma's game, I'd like to look maybe at the side-by-side of when Kuzma started tanking, but I'm pretty sure it was right as Lonzo went out. And the impact that he has on his team, the Lakers, is starting to drop as soon as Lonzo goes out. And are we getting so distracted by the bad shot, by the big mouth father, by the crazy brothers' adventures in Russia, that, we're not seeing that Lonzo is one of the most impactful rookies of this class? It's not all Lonzo's fault. I mean, this draft class is just out of this world. I can't remember a draft class with this much talent top to bottom. And so, it is easy to get lost in the shuffle. Especially with guys like Jason Tatum, who are playing like, 10-year veterans. I think Lonzo is underrated. And I think, like Craig said, in dynasty leagues, you got to target this guy, because long-term, Lonzo is going to be an all-star. His dad got that right. His dad's wrong about most things, but the fact that Lonzo is going to be an all-star, LeVar Ball is dead on.
If you watch Lonzo in college as well, at UCLA, the ability to get the best out of the players around him was it was like no one else in college last season. The way he made TJ Leaflick and Ike Anagbogu, you know, you're talking about guys that, you know, they're talented players. I mean, I've never been a TJ Leaf guy at all. But Lonzo made him look good. And I think this situation in LA over time, you know, that's his role as well. I think there's a lot of the time where he's going to get the best out of his players. And we know about his rebounding ability. We knew about his, you know, his vision and his ability to pass the ball. I think you temper those expectations that you're not going to get, you know, necessarily high volume shooting or, you know, high volume points. But he has the ability to do everything else. And very important, like Brent said, you know, the guy is 20 years old. He was a freshman last year. You know, Kyle Kuzma. I'm really impressed with Kuzma. This is, like I said before, you know, I was wrong on Kuzma. I wasn't very high on him coming into the draft. But this isn't the guy that we saw in college. And in summer league, you know, he just seemed to transition. Something's happened where the game is just so slow for him compared to a lot of other rookies. Let's remember that he's, you know, he's like the Brogdon effect, Malcolm Brogdon effect last year. He's 23 years old, Kyle Kuzma. There's a big, you know, differentiation in terms of the experience that they've had at the college game. And I think Brogdon was 24 years old, wasn't he? So you put it into that perspective, and you look at what Lonzo Ball is able to do in this league at his age, and it really is, yeah, it really is outstanding. He's doing exactly what we should have expected him to do. I think it's just those lofted expectations from all the media and that we hear in the high draft position, that people expect a little bit too much, I think, in the rookie season. Just create, you know, and it isn't just him. You know, this buy low window is starting to close on a lot of these guys, whether it be Dennis Smith Jr. or De'Aaron Fox and Frank Ntilikina. He's going to be another guy soon that's going to get the keys. I know Jack's been playing phenomenally well. But these guys, you know, now is the time. I'm not saying that all of them are going to have a second half breakout, but you certainly know that the potential there for the guys that have got the key to minutes, you know, for Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonzo Ball, and even De'Aaron Fox now, you know, these are guys that you should be targeting because the perception of their value is so low compared to what it should be because they haven't come out the gates running.
Even Josh Jackson just had, I mean, TJ Warren was out, but even Josh Jackson's starting to show signs of life.
Yeah, well, you've got to remember Josh Jackson as well. Like last season and Kansas, he had a slow start to the season. You know, it took him quite a while to adjust to the college game last season. And it was something that I wrote about. It was something I expected this season. He wasn't going to come out all guns blazing. And he started slow in Kansas. And I thought it was going to be the same again this season. It just takes that time to develop. But again, you know, a phenomenal talent. I don't think it's going to happen really this season for Jackson. But you can't give up on him.
Right. I mean, I was looking at on-off stats for the Lakers with Lonzo on and off the floor, and I started with Kuzma to see if there was a big drop-off or anything, but here's some amazing – end up looking at Brandon Ingram's stats and said, so when Lonzo's on the court this year, Ingram's shooting 48% and 41% from three. When Lonzo's off the court, he's shooting 41% and 19% from three. And it's just a perfect example of how much better he's making the guys around him. Ingram has even less assists than when Lonzo's off the court. They move the ball less. I mean, and you see the impact of him, you know, throughout the lineup like that. And like you said, I think that is getting overlooked because of so many different reasons between his dad being a, you know, a clown and just the expectations being so high, and he started off like with the massive dud, and then he get the triple double, but then he was awful again. And just people need to relax. Not every guy who comes into the league is going to be a superstar right away. And just how can you not be encouraged over what he's done in the last month? Because just the shooting, everything's really coming around, and you're looking at a guy who's, considering, you know, 0.8 blocks for a point guard is amazing. I mean, it's as good as anybody besides John Wall. You're looking at a guy who's a massive plus in more than half the categories. And, you know, like you said, the free throw volume is so low that it's not even that big of a minus. And it's, I mean, you have to love his potential going forward. I mean, even if he can maintain this 42% field goal percentage – where he's been over the last month, I mean, that's to the point where it's not so bad that it absolutely kills you. I mean, you got that from guys like Gallinari or other, you know, three-point specialists in the past, and we don't look at Lonzo that way, but he's averaging 2.7 threes a game over the last month, so he's effectively turned himself into that with the massive assists, the massive rebounds for a point guard. Like I said, the block rate is pushing one a game, and he's pushing two steals a game over the last month, too. It's just, he's making strides that you would hope from a rookie. And like you got, like you said, Craig, I mean, there's so many other rookies that you only can hope that they keep doing the same thing, whether it's Fox or, you know, Nili Keenan today had a very good game, played a lot of minutes because, you know, Jared Jack was struggling and barely played.
Well, you look at, like, who are you going to want long-term? I mean, we haven't even brought up Ben Simmons, but going forward, you know, Lonzo is the better fantasy prospect, in my opinion. Ben Simmons doesn't even try to shoot a three. At least Lonzo's given me a couple threes a game. His shot could get better, too.
It's interesting. I mean, yeah, but I mean, it goes both ways, right? Simmons is shooting over 50% because he knows he can't shoot three, so you're getting the good field goal percentage instead, but you miss completely out on the threes, and you're getting more free throw volume at almost as bad a percentage. So that is an interesting debate going forward.
I still think, for me, you've got to take Simmons at this point. The reason being is if you sort of look further forward, Simmons just has that mismatch game, doesn't he? Where at the moment, you know, he's a rookie at the moment. Well, semi-rookie, shall we call him?
Yeah.
Even at the moment, you're still talking about, what is he, 21, I think? And the mismatches he creates is phenomenal. And that's only going to become more LeBron-like as he gets stronger and bigger, learns how to use his hands better around the rim. The three-point shot's never going to be there. It was never there in college. And in college, he was actually criticised for passing the ball a bit too much. But that mismatch opportunity could make it, you know, as long as you know what you're getting, you know that the free throw percentage is going to hurt you on a much higher volume than Lonzo. It's fitting jigsaw pieces, isn't it? Because with this rookie class, they all have strengths, they all have weaknesses. And one of the, you know, this was a super deep, super strong, super talented rookie class. But there was a lot of poor shooters in one way or another that needed a lot of work to be done, whether it was the free throw shooting, the shot selection. Someone with a guy like Fox, you know, needs better shot selection. The free throw guys like Josh Jackson and Simmons and Lonzo Ball. All of them have deficiencies, but the jigsaw puzzle pieces is, you know, like I always say, don't just draft the rookie. Know what it is that you drafted. Know how they're going to slot into your team. You know, some of the least popular guys coming into the season, like Lauri Markkanen and Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, John Collins, they were all guys that weren't going to hurt you in any way. They could all shoot the free throw. You know, Tatum might have surprised us a bit in terms of his role and how much he's been forced to play, but they weren't guys that were going to hurt you in any category. So, you know, the bit of advice you've got to say is know what you're drafting coming into the draft. Know that Fultz was a high-volume, poor free-throw shooter. Know that Lonzo Ball's not a natural 30-point-a-game shooter with poor free throw percentage. And I think it's the case with Lonzo Ball. There's so many teams where his value is top 30 right now because what he does for you, you know, you're not prominent in field goal percentage. And field goal percentage head-to-head is erratic anyway.
Right.
Trying to punt, you know, a field goal percentage punt strategy, I think, is a little bit dumbfounded because on any given week in head-to-head, you know, every dog has its day and every, you know, everybody has their poor nights. But Lonzo Ball definitely is able to, even this season and at the moment, put up top 30 value for guys that his roster construction it supports. I mean, what do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I can't really argue. I mean, like I said, if he's not really hurting you in free throw volume and, like you said, field goal percentage, the variance is so high that he's even going to have stretches where he doesn't hurt you there. I mean, you're looking already at this point, it's, you know, Ricky Rubio on crack. I mean, because you're getting the blocks too that in the threes that Rubio never gave you. I mean, on Simmons, I did not expect two steals and a block a game from him. You know, maybe I was wrong. You know, the lack of effort he showed in college probably skewed me a little bit on that end. But, I mean, that's been a pleasant surprise. And you know, they are in that same.
When we watched him at LSU, though, it was clear that he was disengaged and
100%.
Wasn't trying his best. And you'd see, you know, clutch times at the end of games where he was, you know, rather than taking the game on, just, you know, doing some nice stuff and passing the ball out and kicking it out rather than taking easy points. He was disengaged and dismotivated. Right. But you know, he had phenomenal stats in college, but that wasn't the best Ben Simmons, and we knew it.
Yeah, no, I mean, at least on the offensive end, there was no doubt in my mind. There still is that he's just absolutely incredible. I just never saw, not even ignoring the steals and block numbers, just his general defense is much better than I thought it was going to be, at least as a rookie. Usually rookies come in and they're a mess on the defensive end, or worse than a mess, just they become negative players for their team solely because their defense is so bad. And Simmons is
doing very well.
I mean, Simmons has been great in that end. And, you know, I haven't watched a ton of the Lakers, admittedly, but when I watch them, it seems like, you know, Lonzo's trying for the most part, which, again, is more than you could say for a lot of rookie point guards. I mean, Dennis Smith, to be blunt, I mean, I love his potential and everything, but, I mean, he's just not trying on defense. There's no other way to put it. Like, it's just simply an effort thing for him. He's not trying right now.
Well, that was the same at NC State. Right. His attitude on the court wasn't great. You know, I love the ability of DSJ, but the attitude and that injury history just scared. You know, I was frightened to put him in my top five, regardless of landing spot, just because of the injury history. And I think that's going to come back and bite big at some point.
Lonzo's just one of those sneaky athletic guys, like kind of like even a Magic Johnson. Like, you look at him and it sort of looks like he's just kind of plodding around the court a little bit. Like, he's not just like bouncing around the court like a guy like Giannis or somebody or LeBron, who's just like insanely athletic. But Lonzo, I've watched some games where he all of a sudden, like, there's a rebound that bounces high off the rim and he's higher than everybody for the putback. And I mean, this guy, like, he'll just out of nowhere, he just does something insanely athletic that you weren't expecting. And I think he kind of lulls people to sleep a little bit. And even people, you know, critics or experts or people watching kind of get lulled to sleep a little bit by it. But that's just where I start to get that, like, just sort of internal feeling that he's just something special. Just when I see these little outbursts during the games. And I'm like, if he can ever just kind of put that all together, you know, this kid. I see what people are thinking when they say this kid's going to be special,
I think, like you said, you know, if he can put it all together, I think he kind of is starting to, and he's only 20 years old. You know, there's a long way ahead, and I think you've just got to take advantage of that fact that, you know, there is generally, I mean, not everybody, you know, there are a lot of guys that are really high on him, of course. But there is this general sort of this feeling, I guess, in fantasy circles, that he is underperforming, that he hurts your team. And sometimes perception lasts for a long time without being entirely correct. You think of a guy like DeAndre Jordan, you think, I won't draft him, he's going to kill my free throw percentage. But then when you look closer and you pay attention, you see, well, actually, he's not shooting eight free throws a game like he was a couple of seasons ago. He's now only shooting 3.4, so actually, his value is huge now compared to what it'd be, but yet that perception remains. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same with Lonzo. I think this perception is going to stick with him, and you know, we're never going to have the best shooter in the world. You know, he's not going to match that college 55%. But like you said, if you can get the 42% with the counting stats, you know, you're talking about an absolute stud, and it's only going to get better.
I mean, if you look at, you know, the per game basis for the last month, and I know it's only 9 games for him, but he comes out 33rd in the league in fantasy for the last month. And, you know, the athlete point's a good point, Brent. It made me think of James Harden's that way for me, where he's a really good athlete, but just in a different kind of way. Like, his ability to stop and start like he does is just, it's so unique. And you're right, Lonzo just has those moments where you go through these stretches thinking, like, he's not that good of an athlete, and all of a sudden, just there's this one play that stands out that he makes. That, like you said, whether it's a rebound or, you know, another. I mean, we know the passing ability is otherworldly, and it's just good to see those flashes, and I think we're just going to keep seeing more of them. The Lakers, they're not as bad as I thought they were going to be, honestly. I mean, they are fourth last in the West, and overall record-wise, I think they're sixth or seventh. What's that?
They're right where they want to be.
Yeah, they've got to make sure they don't get too. If they're second to fifth bottom in the league, they lose their pick to the Celtics, don't they?
Right.
So they don't have it
regardless. It's the Sixers.
You got the Sixers, right?
If it's first or sixth through 30, and then 2 through 5 it goes to Boston. Otherwise, they get the Kings pick next year. Which, oh boy, that team. They are lucky to be 13 and 30 because I was doing some digging. They got the holy trifecta. They're dead last in the league in offense. They're dead last in the league in defense and dead last in net rating. You don't see a team dead last in all that for a while, and you don't see that at all, really. Like even those horrible, horrible tanking Sixers teams, like they randomly were okay in defense the one year, and other years they would be like. 24th or 25th, and both 30th. It's that team is just so bad.
You know, Alex, that might be a good segue into talking about the trade deadline, just because of teams being really terrible who might be trying to dump some players. And Craig actually brought up something, if you don't mind. But
no, yeah, let's do that. We'll wrap up that
really quick. Because Craig had brought up something, and this is where I think rookies are really going to get a chance to shine now is when teams like the Hawks or the Mavericks or teams like that start shedding off some of those veterans that might be hogging some minutes from a rookie as rookies, it all sort of works out where the rookies are starting to get more comfortable. And then all of a sudden the minutes start to free up a little bit. And then I'm specifically thinking of someone like, well, Markkanen, who I've nicknamed the Marksman with 2 Ks. When Mirotić looks like a lock to be traded, and Markkanen's already been awesome the last couple weeks, and I think his sky's the limit for fantasy for that kid, especially once Mirotić is gone. And another one to keep an eye on would be John Collins on the Hawks, who I think we touched on a little bit last week, but the Hawks could end up moving someone like Deadman, and a couple of these other guys that could free up a lot of time for Collins, who he's one of those guys who's not sneaky athletic. He's one of those guys who's just bouncing off the walls right. of the gym when he gets on the court. And it's I've stashed him on a team all year because I've watched him play a couple times, and I just know as soon as they take him off the leash, he's going to go crazy. And I'm just hoping that it pays off here in the second half. And I was wondering if you guys had any guys you're kind of been stashing or, you have your eye on hoping, thinking that those minutes are going to free up.
Well, I think I mentioned him before. I think Frank Ntilikina is a really intriguing guy. I think, I watched as much as I could in Europe, but Europe is a very odd situation for young players where so many teams are reliant on sponsorship money and must get now performance. So you see guys like Ntilikina, is it Charleroi, end up being backups with minimal minutes because they're just not ready to bag against, 30-year-old men as such. But super talented player. Jeff Hornacek, mentioned recently, he's not far away from giving him the keys and letting him free. And when you look at what Jarrett Jack has done recently, he's put up some big numbers. Not that I have any issues with Jarrett Jack. I think he's a mildly underrated player and fantasy player as well. But he's a super talented guy. You've got to sort of temper expectations of what to expect from him. He is going to get you steals. He's going to get you assists. He is a pass first point guard. He doesn't have that natural explosion like a guy like DSJ has, for example. He's a very smart player, again, learning the game, but, super talented.
I think, Craig, didn't Frank just have his, first 10 assist game tonight or something?
I thought he had that a couple of nights ago, wasn't it? Or it might have been tonight.
He had a good game today, I'm bringing up now. It was his second one. He had 10 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, a steal, and 2 blocks today. Ended up playing 29 minutes. He's already one of the best defenders in the league at the point guard position. And I think that alone is going to force them, is going to force Hornacek to play him more. And with that is going to come.
With the length of his arms as well, and his ability to, you know, to play defense, and his height, there's going to be minutes that open up as a combo guard, not just as a backup point guard as well.
Right.
Serious arms are huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing 21 minutes a game on the season, and he's averaging 1.2 steals. I mean, if that gets up to 30, now you're looking at a 1.7, 1.8 steal guy, alone with, you know, 5 assists, and there is plenty of value in that there. I mean, he's another guy on the season, his free throw percentage isn't great, but again, he's not even averaging one free throw a game, so it doesn't really matter. And again, it's a pretty appealing option, assuming that he gets the minutes up. I'm interested to see what the Bulls do. Who they trade away besides Mirotić? Do they end up finding someone to take Robin Lopez? I could see Bobby Portis, even on top of Markkanen, becoming a little bit more appealing.
Well, haven't they talked about a potential Mirotić for Derek Favors trade? And I don't wholly hate that for either team either.
No, I know there's been a lot of talk. I mean, as being a Jazz fan, I've been keeping on it, and they've definitely already inquired about Mirotić. It sounds like the Bulls want a first-round pick, and it's not going to happen for him based on a few months of hot shooting. But, you know, again, Favors is definitely gone at the end of the season anyway. Assuming between now and the trade deadline, Gobert gets healthy again and looks fine with how Ekpe Udoh's played, I think they'd be fine trading Favors now, and I do think that trade makes some sense because I think Favors is still a very good player.
They need to stretch the floor from the forward position, the Jazz, and you know, I'm a massive Baylor fan in college, but Royce O'Neal isn't going to be that guy long term.
No, and you know, Thabo's actually played pretty well, but he's out for the year now after tearing his MCL. You know, Jarebko, these guys are what they are, and Favors the free agent at the end of the year. There's no way that he's coming back because the lineup, you know, it worked in the past with Favors and Gobert together. Problem is, though, that sample was a bit skewed because they played all those minutes with Hayward on the floor, too. Now, you know, with Rubio, the floor is just too clogged. Could a lineup with Mitchell at the point with Hood, Ingles, and Favors and Gobert work? I think so. But I don't think, you know, Favors thinks, you know, he's the center. The Jazz have Gobert. He's not going anywhere. He's going to walk at the end of the season anyway, so I do think that move makes some sense, and you know, the Bulls do have the cap space to keep him. He's still a very effective player. He's passed. I mean, you never know if a big guy is truly past, you know, a back injury, but he looks like it. He played very well tonight before we started recording. I was watching. He had 10-5 in the block in the first quarter. He ended up with 16-7 with, you know, 3 steals and 2 blocks. He could get a boost in fantasy. I mean, he's still available in about a third of leagues right now. Once Gobert comes back, he would be borderline useless, at least in like a 12-man league. But if he does get moved, then this is a guy who 2 years ago was a top 50 player with ease, and it's not impossible that he comes back to that.
He's still only 26 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about a dinosaur. And if he did go to the Bulls, I really like that.
Yeah, it's a great fit next to Markkanen.
And you think about that Bulls construction, and you know, for all the grumbles about the trade, the Jimmy Butler trade, I mean, it's looking better by the day. You know, they got three guys that they've got out of it essentially, all sort of relatively high lottery picks, and proving exactly why they were. But you think about you stick Favors in that sort of center slot, if you like. Being able to use it, you know, they could do some offense in the paint, and Favors could provide that. And you think
we haven't even seen Levine yet this year with them. So
no, but you think that the value of a guy like Markkanen to Levine is huge. You know, Markkanen's ability to stretch the floor and take, you know, create space in the paint is surely going to bring the best out of Levine. And I think that you stick Favors into that mix. Of being able to score inside the paint, you know, it becomes a really intriguing team from a fantasy standpoint, from 1-5.
Yeah, I don't see that trade hurting Markkanen in any way.
Sure. It'll help. I think it'll help.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
I don't know that. I don't know that. I think Portis probably kind of stays around where he's at. I mean, because Portis is one of those guys who can give you a couple threes and a couple blocks and 9 to 10 boards, you know, if he gets the minutes. The problem is he going to get them?
But I think there was an element of when they drafted Markkanen that they were moving away, you know, from Bobby Portis.
Yeah,
to a certain degree.
The only way I really, like I said, if they traded Lopez too and then end up, say they do trade Mirotić for a pick somewhere else and they don't get anyone back, and now you're basically left with Markkanen, Portis, and like Felicio is your bigs, and Portis is forced to play a lot, I could see it. He's a good rebounder, we know that for sure, and the points will be fine. It's whether, you know, he gets the minutes to be relevant anywhere else. I mean, LaVine, now he's been back for two games. He looked very good today. I watched, you know, in 20 minutes, 18, 5, and 5, and two steals. And, you know, obviously you're not going to expect that going forward. But he is, you know, owned in most places already. But if he isn't if he is available, it's probably worth taking the shot, because the threes are going to be crazy. And he's always been a decent field goal percentage guy, despite the high three volume. I mean, he shot 46% last year. I mean, he's not going to help you much in the steals or blocks, but he could be, you know, a very good, you know, Dragunov who gives you decent assists too. I mean,
he has to be owned. Yeah, you have to own LaVine, and when he gets up to speed, like I said, we haven't even seen them with him up to full speed yet. It's he's that. I think LaVine was so poised to take that next step into, you know, close to all-star level, I believe. I mean, if you just look at, I think that LaVine can be an all-star. I don't know what you guys think, but and I can't wait to see him get ramped up by the end of the year.
He seems like a guy to me who would, like, be on the conversation but never make it. But, I mean, who knows? He's such a freak athlete. And I think, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I think it helps a ton that he's not in Minnesota anymore, because he can take the most shots. I mean, it's either him or Markkanen are going to take the most shots probably. I know Dunn is up there in terms of field goal attempts per game. He actually is ahead of Markkanen, but I think LaVine will be the number one option sooner or later, and that's going to be 20-plus points a game. You know, and
I think LaVine could be like an Oladipo.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the fantasy comparison. It's kind of like Lou Williams in a way. It's, you know, the steals and blocks are low. It's not the free throw volume that Lou is, but he also shoots a higher percentage from the field. But it's he's super appealing, and a guy who, you know, next year, how high will he go in drafts? It's an interesting question, because again, he's lacking in the defensive categories, but from a scoring standpoint, it's going to be great. And, you know, who knows, the Bulls getting on this run is actually taking them from the cellar out to where they'd be picking around 10th in the draft now, because they've been doing so well since Mirotić and Nwaba, for that matter, have come back.
And this is the first time you got to think that he's played on a team with a real specialist stretch four as well.
Mm-hmm.
You think of his time at the Timberwolves, there was, you know, I mean, the Belica, and there's got, you know, Towns occasionally, yeah, and stuff.
Gorgie Jang, it's all.
But there was no one that really created that space in the paint for him to attack and use his athleticism. And,
right.
And that's kind of what gets me excited, probably more so in the future than necessarily this season, as they kind of develop together. But I think there's a lot of value to be had there for sure in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues.
I think you keep harping a little bit on his defensive stats, but I'd like to, you know, take a look, go back and revisit this conversation maybe this time next year, and see where his steals and blocks are at, because he's so athletic that, you know, I think given the time, you know, I think he could be a, you know, a 1.6 steals guy. He could be a 0.8 to 1 block guy. Just based off his once he gets all his athleticism back after that injury.
I mean, he is a guy who frustrated me because of it. I mean, last year he played over 37 minutes a game and was at 0.9 steals. Like, I just don't know how it doesn't end up being higher than that, just playing that many minutes. But usually guys peak at steals and blocks right when they start their career, and they just gradually trend a bit downward. But there are some instances, you know, look at how Durant's blocks have shot up, and he's not the only one. The league going the way it is, more threes and everything, you are seeing some guys spike up their steals and blocks later on. And yeah, it wouldn't completely surprise me if Levine's one of those guys. I mean, playing next to Dunn, who's two steals a game right now, it's kind of contagious to have that kind of effort. And, you know, maybe we'll just stumble into the more steals. That ends up being a huge difference between him being, you know, a guy who's the top 50 player, or if he ends up being, I don't know, Wiggins, who shoots threes, and you're just he's on your roster for sure, but you don't get super excited about having him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can go with that.
Yeah, I could see Levine. I could see Levine next year being one of those guys who we, you know, the same way we're having that conversation about. I keep going back to like Oladipo, mm-hmm. Where we knew that they were going to have the opportunity and we knew the volume was going to be there, but we didn't think he was going to be that good. Right. And I could see that with Levine next year. He's like, okay, well, the opportunity is there. You know, here's this kind of average stats. Let's see what happens. And then we're going to be looking back and going, holy cow, this guy's like top 20.
Right. That's why I keep going back to Lou Williams in my mind. The same kind of idea. It's, you know, Lou's been doing it, not quite to Oladipo's level for the whole year at least, but that same kind of guy who you think he's going to give you threes and score a lot, and you end up getting even more than you expected from him.
Or like a Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, Tyreek's another guy we talked about last time. Just never expected him to have this kind of year, and, you know, knock on wood, he doesn't get hurt again anytime soon, and at least for the Grizzlies' sake, so they could get some trade value in return for him. Anything else you two guys want to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I think that's good for me. I think give me a chance to catch the end of this Rockets-Clippers game. And a nice day ahead.
Yeah, just thank you guys for having me on again. You know, keep reading Razzball. Look for all three of us on there. You can follow me on Twitter at TheFantasyDick, T-H-E, Fantasy Dick, on Twitter. I do fantasy updates, give injury news, talk about whatever's happening that day. And, I look forward to next time.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Storytelling41. Again, it's primarily college and college basketball and prospect MLB prospect related. But if that's your thing, be sure to give it a follow. And thanks.
I'll include both your guys' Twitter handles in the description for the post. You can follow me at RazzballViz. Follow Razzball in general, too, for all the sports. If you go to basketball.razzball.com, if there's anything you want us to do for the next podcast, anything you want us to change, any topics you want us to discuss, please let us know either via Twitter or on the website. We'll be back next week at some point. We're going to try to eventually get a regular schedule going, pick a day, and so you guys know when it's coming. But for now, we'll talk to everybody soon, and thanks for listening. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.